Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of Cavalytics, a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. We're available on both SoundCloud and iTunes, but presumably you know that since you're listening right now. We would really appreciate it if you could tell your friends and spread the word about us. Also, hearts, I think, is what the like mechanic on SoundCloud is, or good ratings, or whatever the mechanic is on iTunes helps us get some free placement, so it'd be great if you could help us out there. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. And we love hearing from you, so please reach out if you have anything interesting to say. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going pretty well. We had a good win today.
Yeah, the Cavs just got done beating the Nets about 10 minutes ago. They won by 20, 107-87.
Yeah, no, honestly, it wasn't even that close. I think it was more like a 30-point blowout.
Yeah, the Cavs were up by 30 before it was Jordan McRae time. We were talking a little bit about, or I don't know, I was talking to you during the game about how it might be nice to not count like the last 10 minutes of blowouts in SRS, and I wonder if that would be like more indicative of team strength, but I don't know. In any case, Cavs won by 20 and looked good doing it. LeBron was 8 of 11 and had 24 points. Kevin Love was 6 of 10, had 19 points. He was 4 of 8 from 3. Irving stunk again. He was 4 of 14, 10 points, and he was only a plus 4. But apparently he was sick today.
He missed shoot-around. I think he and JR both missed shoot-around, right?
Okay. Yeah, JR was sort of so-so as well. He was 3 of 8, 2 of 7 from 3 for 8 points.
I mean, that's still a 50 true shooting percentage. Kyrie's.
Yeah. I think we can give Kyrie a pass on this one. But yeah. It was a good game. It was nice to see the Cavs were at home. They seemed, pretty motivated. I thought it was interesting. LeBron took 0 3-pointers.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. Hopefully in the playoffs, it's going to be more of him driving and cutting as opposed to just jacking up shots.
Yeah.
I'm okay with him taking really wide open three-pointers, especially if teams are sort of playing off of him. But other than that, I don't really want to see him taking any pull-up threes or anything of that sort.
A thought is that, maybe if the word got out that LeBron never shot jumpers anymore, that people would start defending him in such a way that made him less effective around the hoop. But I think he's still first in the NBA in paint efficiency. There certainly hasn't been an adjustment yet that has affected his efficiency. I agree. I would like to see him shooting only as a decoy or if he's wide open, which may be the same thing.
Right.
Actually,
one thing I want to mention is LeBron did have 6 turnovers, which people always kind of ignore in the box score, but it's an important one because turnovers actually hurt way more than assists help.
Yeah, there were a couple sloppy ones too. Like he tried to do a shovel pass to JR in the corner and missed. He had the one where he was on the breakaway and sort of just fumbled it out of bounds.
Right.
But
yes, some bad passes and some like fumbles.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about it. I mean, it's just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, overall his turnovers are down this year. Last year he was 3.9 a game. This year he's 3.2. That's an incredible improvement.
It is.
And he's playing basically.
Last year he was really bad with the turnovers. I remember there were like certain games where he would have, 5 or 6 turnovers, and he had like 5 of those games in a row.
Yep. Yeah, his assists are down a little bit this year too, but his turnovers are down in a disproportionate ratio. His assist to turnover ratio is better. That's been good. I don't know if you have anything else to say about the game. I did want to talk about two other things tonight. The two other things I wanted to talk about were Kevin Love playing the 5, playing center. And I also wanted to basically do a segment. I've written down a bunch of questions about the Cavs they want to ask you, and they're just sort of like quick questions, and I want to get your quick takes on them. But did you have anything else you wanted to talk about tonight's game about first?
Yeah, one thing. Did you notice that play where Shumpert had a wide-open layup, and he tried to pass it in the paint where there were three guys surrounding him? Yeah, I'm not sure what he tried there. I don't know. He's been kind of overactive lately. Like you see him try all these new things,
Yes.
but none of them actually end up working out.
Yeah, I so he has been fairly inefficient on offense this year. I think he's feeling better than he's felt for a long time. Like he just seems to have more bounce in his step, and
Yeah, he does. I agree.
he's very active. So, a short-term consequence of that maybe or appears to have been that he is putting the ball on the floor more, taking it to the hoop. The play you're talking about, yeah, I think he got a pass where he was cutting in, and he it would have been tough. It would have been a left-handed finish, but instead, with his left hand, he tried to wrap it around the defender and pass to Tristan, and it was a
Right.
turnover. And it was just a bad decision. You could see they showed it on the replay, and you could see he was immediately sort of had both his fists sort of clenched up in the air, going like, "Oh man!" So he knew it too. But yeah, he's been sort of hyperactively inefficient the last sort of 3 or 4 or 5 games, but I don't know. I'm going to take that as a good thing. What do you
Yeah,
think?
so one of the things is last year what made him useful on the floor with the big three was that he played within his role, which was simply open shots and not really try anything else. Obviously, the big three aren't shooting that well this season, so that's kind of a problem, which has reduced his efficiency on the offensive end as well.
Yeah, I mean he was 1 of 4 tonight, and
Yeah, I mean,
two of those were corner threes. So it's
right.
not like he's going out and, taking 9 shots, and
That's
missing
true.
seven of them. But yeah, I think that he is definitely trying to do a little bit too much right now. But I'm willing to tolerate Irving and Mozgov stinking up the joint while we try to figure out if they can get their confidence back and get back to a better level of play. No problem. I'm willing to tolerate Iman Shumpert sort of feeling it out during this hyperactive phase of his.
Yeah, I think it's okay. The only problem is we have like, what, 8 games left now?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's too bad that we're this late in the season to still be figuring things out. It was
Right, but
interesting, Zach Lowe's piece this week. It came out 3 days ago. Zach Lowe is sort of the, I don't know, NBA specialist writer for ESPN, formerly Grantland, now ESPN. And he did a piece dedicated on the Cavs, and he was talking about how discombobulated the Cavs are and how they don't really have an identity. And he had some quotes from both Tyronn Lue and Jim Boylan, the Cavs' primary assistant coach, talking about how they don't even really know exactly who they're supposed to be. And yeah, that's alarming, but, here we are.
Right. And what do you think of LeBron playing the second highest minutes of anyone on the floor today?
Right. Yeah, LeBron played 31 minutes.
Nobody else played more than Shane Larkin played 32 minutes, and that's about it. Everyone else
Yes.
played less than 30 minutes today.
Yeah. Baseball Hall of Famer Barry Larkin's son played 32 minutes.
Is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he
Okay.
is. It's actually really unusual. They mentioned this on the broadcast, but yeah, it's really unusual to have like baseball basketball crossover, even multi-generational. So he's a little bit unique in that aspect. But anyway, yeah. So I wish LeBron had played 28 minutes, as I wish he always plays 28 minutes. But 31 is okay.
Yeah, but I mean, in the 30-point or 25, whatever point blowout on the first night of a back-to-back, I think this is a prime opportunity to get him some rest, in-game rest.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this almost every show. I do not know why he plays so many minutes. I think, it's partially LeBron and partially the coaching staff not being man enough to sort of approach him about this. But
Well.
8 games worth of rest probably won't make that much of a difference anyway. So,
We can move on.
yeah. Okay, so I wanted to talk about well, a couple things. So I wanted to talk about playing Kevin Love at the five, primarily as it pertains to getting Tristan Thompson into the starting lineup. And Zach Lowe talked about this a bit in his article. I'm going to read a part from that right now. So Thompson is a better rim protector, but he's also much faster. He usually guards stretch power forwards, leaving Love to bump with behemoth centers down low. This could be a minor problem against Jonas Valanciunas, Hassan Whiteside, Andre Drummond, or Pau Gasol, though all four of those opponents would be massive underdogs against Cleveland. So I think what Lowe is saying here is when you have Thompson and Love both starting, or both on the court at the same time, it could create a defensive problem for us. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have the numbers on this, and should I mention the numbers first?
Yeah, well, let's talk about how it would affect us defensively first, hypothetically, and then we can actually share the numbers.
Yeah, so I think Love is a bit underrated as a defender, but again, he definitely cannot hang with the Bemis centers, like Hassan Whiteside in the paint, or
Yeah.
anyone who's really good in the paint. I don't think he'll be able to hang with them, so that's going to be a problem. Another problem is Love, if he has to defend a lot inside the paint, he ends up in foul trouble a lot. So that's what happened in the Heat game, where he had to defend Hassan Whiteside because he started at the five in that game, and anytime he had to switch over, he would end up trying to wrap someone up
Right.
for a foul because they were going for a layup.
Because he's
So
overmatched.
yeah, he's overmatched in that case, especially when guards switch onto him. He's overmatched there.
So I agree that he would not appear to have the constitution or makeup to defend opposing, big opposing centers. However, I think he is probably worse at being out switching on the pick and roll. And so I'm a little bit confused by his defensive RPM, which is, I had it here. His defensive RPM is 2.71, which is really, really good. So, do you have any theories for why his defensive RPM is so high?
Yeah, I think some of it. I think his placement is really good. He almost always finds himself in the right place.
Yeah.
Especially, obviously not in the pick and roll situation. I think everyone agrees that he's not the best pick and roll defender.
The
But in other
Cavs
situations,
try to keep him out of that, though, which is good.
right. But in other situations, like helping on the lanes, he does a very good job of pushing people out of the lane. So if someone's running baseline and kind of going around the rim, he pushes them out. So like. They're often forced to either dribble the ball out of bounds or just dribble or just try to throw an errant pass, which someone else can intercept. So in that case, I think his positioning is the best thing. And then he doesn't jump, so he doesn't foul a lot, which is a good thing and a bad thing. I think one of the things that's overrated is when you try to defend in the post is to jump on the shot. I think as long as you have your hands up and you're there, that's going to have the same effect as jumping on before the shot takes place. So what
Yeah,
do you think about that?
I think I basically agree with you. So I've mentioned this before. I am not the best sort of observer of basketball in terms of like being able to see and discern on the court what people are doing that makes them effective at what they do. But because his defensive RPM is so high, and based on what I know about Kevin Love, he does seem to be very smart. And my theory for why his defensive RPM is so high is basically the same as yours. He positions himself and puts himself in places that sort of minimizes his lack of athleticism and is able to leverage that as best as he possibly can. And, so far he's been pretty good on defense. So this notion that starting him at the five, the Cavs would give up a bunch, may be true. But anyway, why don't you tell us what the Cavs D rating is with Love at the five?
Yeah, so with Love at the five, the Cavs D rating is 107.5.
Okay, so that means that per 100 possessions, the Cavs give up 107.5 points. So how many minutes has Kevin Love logged at the five?
It's 253 minutes, so and 475 possessions.
Okay, so that's not. I think normally when judging things in the NBA, the sort of notional sample size number that people like is 500 minutes, so he's only halfway to that. But, look, this is all we have. He doesn't play the five very often. Okay, so the Cavs D rating is 107.5. What is the Cavs D rating overall?
It's a 102, I think. We
Okay.
looked it up. 102.5.
Yeah, so. So all right, so the Cavs give up an extra 5.5 points per 100 possessions with Love at the five. What is the Cavs O rating with Love at the five?
Yeah, I think this is the big jump. So it's 127.7.
127.7. I'm feigning incredulity here. I already knew that number, but that is a like incredible offense. That is significantly better than, for example, the Warriors' offense. Okay,
Correct.
what is the Cavs O rating overall this season?
107.
Okay, so they get a 20-point gain on offense and they give up 5 extra points on defense. Is that an accurate description of the situation?
Yep.
So that would imply to me that getting Love and Tristan Thompson on the court at the same time would be a good idea. I think they should do that more. Do you agree?
Wait, Levin Tristan Thompson or Levin the five?
Because I don't care who plays the five, but probably.
Oh, Levin TD should definitely be on the floor.
Yeah,
I think that's already been established. I don't think Mozgov should be playing any minutes, right? So I have some numbers on Cavs with Mozgov and Cavs without Mozgov, especially the top two Cavs. Oh, so if you look at LeBron and Love overall,
yes,
their offensive rating is 116 together, and their defensive rating is 104.
This is LeBron and Love?
Yeah, it's a two-man lineup. So just looking at LeBron and Love.
Okay, when both are on the floor. 116 O rating, 104 D rating.
Yeah, and the net rating is 11.8.
Okay.
Okay, and then if you look at LeBron plus Love plus Mozgov, the net rating is 0.8. So if you simply add Mozgov to the mix, that's how bad you become.
Yeah, it's not so much adding Mozgov as it is probably subtracting Tristan Thompson. But yeah, that's not good.
It's both, I think, right?
Yeah.
But then if you have LeBron plus Love without Mozgov, so no Mozgov on the floor, it's the offensive rating is 121, defensive rating is 102.6, and the net rating is 18.4. So it's just as good as it is with Love at the five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, one of my questions for the upcoming Lightning round was, do you think Tristan Thompson will start every game of the playoffs?
He should. Will
That's
he?
Not what I asked.
No, he won't. I don't think he will start against if we play Miami or something. I don't know.
That's disappointing. Why do you think that?
I think that's why he's been auditioning him, right? I think he wants... The only reason he would play Mozgov for this last month and especially start him is if you want to play him in the playoffs and if you want him to start in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, they're starting Kyrie Irving too, right? And obviously Kyrie Irving is not as good as Matthew Dellavedova right now, but they're doing it. My thought with Mozgov was that maybe they... I'm making this up as I go along here, but my thought was maybe they would like to try to give him as long as possible to sort of reestablish some confidence. He actually had a decent game tonight, by the way, offensively.
Yeah, no, he was good tonight.
Yeah.
No problems tonight. But you know, that happens once in every...
Yeah, look, I'm not going to bank on him suddenly being awesome. But yeah, I guess my hope was, okay, Tyronn Lue knows he sucks, but he is waiting for as long as possible to pull him because... reasons. I don't know. They want to try to... I don't know. I actually... Yeah, I don't know what the and is there. I don't know why he is still playing so much. It's disappointing, really. Like, it implies the Cavs don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, he was great last year. I think they're just hoping that he gets back into that, to the same form. I think that's the only thing I can imagine.
Okay,
why
so maybe we just say it's the same reason as they're still starting Kyrie. It's like, well, let's give them as long as possible. Maybe the final three games before the playoffs, they'll start trying to get into
it. But then
LeBron's
not going to play in
those
games.
Maybe they just think they can use the first round or two of the playoffs to practice.
Maybe the first round. I wouldn't bank on
that. That's pretty ballsy, right? Like that's a risky strategy. Like my preference would be to take the last sort of 10 games of the regular season and try and get your rotations squared up. But either they're incompetent or... they have decided to use the playoffs to do that, right?
Yeah.
Like what other options are there?
So I have some numbers for the Warriors with Draymond at the five.
Yes.
As it turns out, it's the exact same as the Cavs with Love at the five. So the Warriors' offensive rating with Draymond at the five is 127.3. Cavs was 127.7.
Yep.
Their defensive rating with Draymond at the five is 107.1.
Wow.
Cavs was 107.7. So it's obviously this is twice as many minutes. So he's played 622 minutes, whereas with Love at the five, we were at 240, I think.
Yeah.
A little more than twice. But yeah, I mean, the numbers are pretty much exact same. I think it deserves more consideration. Obviously, I don't think it will be once you stretch out the minutes, but I think it deserves more time on the floor right now. Because can you imagine, if they never tried with Draymond at the five last season, they would have never gone to it in the playoffs. They may have actually lost in the finals.
Do you have access right now to how many minutes Draymond played at the five last season during the regular season? Is that easy for you to find?
Yeah, just give me a second. I can find that out.
The reason I bring that up is was listening to Ethan Sherwood Strauss, who's works for ESPN, and he's basically embedded with the Warriors, and he was saying that Draymond played very few minutes at the five last season, and it really wasn't until the playoffs that they really, you know, started going into that, particularly in the finals against our Cleveland Cavaliers. So I'm just curious, because, yeah, like maybe the Cavs know. Maybe they know that they have something good with Love at the five, and you know, they know it burns them out a little bit, and it's tough, and maybe they just don't want to show it too much, and that's why.
Yeah, I mean, last season he did play at the five. So the way I'm looking at if he plays at the five is without Andrew Bogut, without Festus Ezeli, and without Maurice Spates. Those are the only people who play at the five, right?
Because nobody else switches last year. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, and this year I also added Anderson and Varejao because he sometimes plays there. But he actually played 440 minutes last season at the five.
Okay, so, well, that's still basically 40% less than he's done this year, and they still have 10 games left. But yeah, okay. That's still not many, right? 440 minutes is less than 5 games worth of minutes, or less than 6 games worth of minutes.
So last season they were 114 offensively with him, offensive rating with him at the 5, and 96 defensive rating.
Yeah, so basically so the same net, though.
Same net rating. I think that the trend for them this year has been that they've dropped defensively but improved a lot more offensively.
Right.
So their net rating has actually gone up.
What do you think the key to the Warriors' improvement on offense has been? This is
unleashing Steph Curry.
Yeah, Steph Curry being amazing. Okay, let's talk about the Warriors. So that's Kevin Love. I would like to see. Oh, two more things from the Zach Lowe piece about Kevin Love at the five. So they had a quote from Jim Boylan, who's the Cavs' assistant coach, and he said Kevin at center just hasn't been effective for us. And they had a quote from Tyronn Lue. Tyronn Lue said, "It can be hard for us to get to that lineup." So I could give Lue the benefit of the doubt here. Maybe he's saying, because I am moronically continuing to start Timofey Mozgov, it's hard to get to the lineup where Love is at center. Although a pessimist might say he's saying it's hard to get to that lineup because for some reason he thinks it's a bad lineup. Jim Boylan flat out said, "Kevin at center just hasn't been effective for us." So I think we just empirically showed, you know, demonstrably showed that Kevin Love at center is an amazing lineup.
It has worked. I mean, we can't say it's an amazing lineup because we don't know how it's going to work in the future.
The sample size is small, so we can't be positive. But he says it hasn't been effective for us. We're not sure how effective it will be going forward. I mean, it objectively and inarguably has been massively effective, right? That the net rating is 18. So this is disappointing and alarming, I must say.
Yeah, I don't know if they're like flat out lying or they just don't have access to these numbers or they just don't care for the numbers. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Well, okay, hopefully they listen to this podcast and will be emailing us at cavaliticsnba@gmail.com. Okay, do you want to move on? So I wanted to do something sort of fun for the remainder of the show here. I've written down a bunch of questions to ask you about the Cavs. Some of them we could like sort of get into, but most of them should be sort of quick. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, question one. Will LeBron James ever leave the Cavs?
Okay, so ever, like anytime before retirement?
Correct.
I'm going to go with no. Do you want me to explain why, or should
sure.
I?
Sure. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Well, I'm not 100% sure, obviously, but okay. I think with the balance of probabilities, I would say no. But I think there's a chance that he leaves at the end of his, or maybe like, I don't know, two seasons before he retires to go play with Carmelo or Chris Paul or Dwayne Wade again or something. Or maybe they come here. Who knows?
Yeah,
I think there's a small chance, but the fact that Dwayne Wade's his play has regressed so much, Carmelo's play has regressed so much. Really, the only two effective players right now in that tandem is LeBron and Chris Paul. Right. I just don't see it happening.
I agree. So okay, I would say that he is unlikely, very unlikely to leave while he is still in his quote unquote prime.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And yeah, during his twilight years. I who knows? I think there is some PR machinations he can do that would sort of make that palatable to the Cleveland fans, and so
especially if the Cavs win a title before that.
Right. That was question two. Will he win a ring in Cleveland?
I'm gonna go with yes.
Okay. What do you think the odds that he wins a ring are?
Since I said yes, I would have to say above 50%.
Yes, he would.
So, 55%, 60%.
Okay. I think they are less than that, but I'm glad you think they are high. Okay. Will LeBron James ever average more than 25 points per game again? He's averaging 25.0 this season.
No. No.
Okay. What will the first year he doesn't average 20 points per game be?
Probably. So what is it's this year is 2016, so probably 2019.
Okay, so you
the
think...
The 2019-2020 season.
Okay, so that's actually four seasons, right? So we have...
The one before that, sorry. 2018-2019.
Okay. Yeah, three seasons from now. I think I agree with that. It's possible that if he rediscovers his jumper...
Exactly.
That he could stave that off an additional year. But I don't have a whole lot of optimism about this current incarnation of LeBron James's offense aging well. It's
yeah,
pretty
if he keeps
on his
playing
body.
Like this, right, if he keeps playing like this, I don't think he'll be averaging more than 20. Yeah, I think exactly maybe two or three seasons. But if he finds his jumper again and at least regresses back to his career averages, I can see that, like you said, pushing it off one more year.
Right. So the next question was, do you think LeBron James will break the all-time points scored record? And you clearly think no.
Oh, all-time? Like,
yeah.
Like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? No, no, no. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think he needs to average 25 points per game for like six more seasons. That's
I think he'll break top three, though.
Oh, yeah. I do, too. But yeah, Kareem is not catchable. Let's see. So you already sort of addressed this, but will Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, or Chris Paul ever play in a Cleveland uniform?
Any of those three or
ever? Any
three?
Of those three ever?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
Carmelo
I think so
might.
Too. I think so too. I think yeah, each
I
of them.
Chris Paul might. Who
I
knows?
Think each of them has double digit percent chance, right? Like I don't know how exactly. But, you know, like Paul could be, you know, our long advocated for Irving for Paul situation. Carmelo could be some sort of trade that involves Kevin Love.
Hopefully
Wade
not.
Is a free agent, so Wade could just show up if he's, you know, willing to take a huge pay cut. Wade is no good anymore, so we wouldn't really want him. But
I mean, I'll take him for the minimum, whatever.
Yeah. So would I. I think we could find a role for him.
Yeah.
Plus it would just be fun, right? Like as a fan, like the analytics are fun, but it would be fun to watch them.
They both have nice chemistry. I think no one can deny that.
They do. And they might be good for each other. And so
I think it'll help LeBron's, whatever you want to call it, passive aggressiveness or
I do too. I think, when you have someone around that you're like sort of trying to impress, you sort of behave yourself a bit more. Or at least I do. Okay, I have some questions about some other Cavs. So Tristan is currently 30th in RPM at 1.24 among centers. So he's the 30th best center in the league by RPM. Will he ever be a top 10 RPM center?
No, he's not tall enough.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. Well, all right. So RPM has this height component that sort of limits players' ability to get... players who are short for their position, it limits their ability to rank well. Let's say I change the question to power forward.
Let me quickly check. What's the top 10 cutoff for power forwards right now? It's 2.5. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And if I were to say top 50 in the NBA, so that's a little bit of a different question. Like, so top 10 among centers, I'm switching it to top 50 in the NBA.
So he's like top 70 right now, right? I think he's like 70 something right now,
yes.
If I remember correctly.
Yes.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, I think so too. I like Tristan's upside. I think that especially now that this contract stuff is behind him, having a whole off season where he's, dedicated to his improving his game, I think can really will help.
And Cavs are sold on him. Like Cavs want to keep him. He hasn't been any of the trade rumors, so.
Well, yeah, no, he's not going anywhere. His, you know, yeah. we're gonna especially do a show about this,
years,
but his,
yeah.
his contract is about to suddenly start looking awesome. Okay, Kyrie Irving is currently 30th amongst point guards in RPM at -0.75, largely influenced by his -3.28 defensive RPM. Do you think Kyrie Irving will have ever have a 0.0 defensive RPM or higher?
No, even like an average point guard doesn't have 0.0. Like on average, point guards have a negative RPM, so definitely not Irving.
Yeah, you're right. The top 14 point guards by RPM have positive defensive RPMs. Everyone else has negative defensive RPM. So he would have to become basically one of the top 14 defensive point guards in the league.
And I don't see that happening, so.
Okay, I agree. That was a trick question. I was going to bring that up with you, but you sniffed it out, Arnav. Good work. Matthew Dellavedova is, let's see here. I'm just going to get today's. So we found out that RPM on ESPN updates on Mondays, so this is a few days old. But okay, so Matthew Dellavedova's RPM is 1.08. He is the 18th best point guard in the NBA by RPM.
17th.
Maybe 18th. I'm looking. I'm showing 18.
Okay, maybe. Patrick I think it was using my cash. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, he's actually not had the greatest month, so he's been falling a little bit. I think he peaked at like 12 or 11. But in any case, the 18th best point guard in the NBA is a lot more than what we're paying Matthew Dellavedova for. So let's be happy for what we have. Do you think Matthew Dellavedova will ever be a top 15 point guard by RPM?
Over the course of the entire year?
No, over his entire career.
But at any point, do you mean like at any point when this?
Let's take out the sort of early season statistical noise possibility and make it a final season RPM.
Yeah, I think so. He's not that far right now. You said top 15, right?
Yeah, he's number.
Yeah, he's
18.
Only three away. I mean, he was top 12 last month. He hasn't had a great month. That's why he's dropped. But yeah, okay. Easily, I can see that happen.
Do you think Matthew Dellavedova deserves a max contract?
No.
Why not? If he's a top 15 point guard.
I mean, top 15 point guards don't deserve max contracts.
Okay. I wonder how many of these top 15 have max contracts or deserve them. Okay, let me just read them off. Steph Curry, yes. Russell Westbrook. I'm not saying yes to have. I'm saying yes to have or deserve. Curry, yes. Westbrook, yeah. Yes. Chris Paul, yes. Kyle Lowry, yes. Ricky Rubio, yes or no?
Interesting. I mean, yeah, with the numbers, he should.
Yeah.
I don't think he will get one because he can't shoot, but even because of his passing, his offensive RPM is really good. He's the best defensive point guard in the league. So, yeah, I mean, I would say yes.
Okay. Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I mean, with the new.
He's going to get it. He's going to get
it. He's going to get it, yeah.
John Wall,
yes.
Already has it. Mike Conley, I think, already has it. No, Mike Conley's a free agent, right?
He's not going to get one because of his age and his injury history.
Yeah, only 56 games this year. I bet.
Last season, he in the playoffs, he was injured.
He might get it. I thought he was. Isn't he like 28?
Is he? I thought he was older.
He's 28. He turns 29 on October 11th.
Huh. He might actually then. You're right. Yeah.
Okay. Eric Bledsoe. So we're now down to 9. Eric Bledsoe. I think Eric Bledsoe already. He doesn't have a max.
He's
very
close.
Close to it, though, right?
Yeah, that Rich Paul thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. So Bledsoe, we'll call him a kind of. Goran Dragic. I'm going to go no on Dragic.
He already has one, though, right? From Heat.
Close to it. Close
yeah,
to it.
Close
I don't know
it.
If it's max. Patty Mills is the number 11. So he's no and no. Damian Lillard already has it. Isaiah Thomas doesn't have it, but
he's
going to
get
it. Reggie Jackson for Detroit doesn't have one, but might get
he'll
it.
He'll get it, yeah.
Okay, so we're now down to 14. The only two that we've said no to are,
Patty Mills.
Mean, kind of Rubio, Patty Mills, and yeah, that's sort of it. Anyway, look, the point is, so you said no to Matthew Dellavedova, but like, you know, all right, so 14 is Reggie Jackson, 15 is Dennis Schroeder, 16 is Drew Holiday, and 17 is
I think I'd say no to all of these, actually.
Yeah,
I'm going to say
yeah,
no to
so that's
Schroeder,
the line.
I'm gonna say
I stopped because that's like where the line sort of becomes
There's also
clear.
A big jump, so I think one thing to mention is like the top 4 or 5 point guards are really good, and then after that there's a huge drop.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, just RPM. Number one is Curry, 9.41, Westbrook, 8.3, Paul, 7.4, Lowry 7.35, Rubio 4.65. Right, so this, I mean, this is like a profound drop. And then by the time we're down to Isaiah Thomas at number 13, we're at 1.74. Lillard is 1.76 at number 12. So yeah, huge difference in value to a team. And so while I agree that Matthew Dellavedova conceptually does not seem like a max point guard, let's say he, you know, plays well next year and plays himself so that he's like number 12 in RPM, right? He's tied with Damian Lillard, say. I mean,
so one thing I want to say with RPM too, though, is it also depends on the role. It depends on your role on the team. For example, if we keep playing if we keep asking Matthew Dellavedova to do something that he can't do, his RPM is going to keep dropping, right? Because he's not going to help the team that much.
Right.
So his role is pretty limited. So he only does threes. He's a great passer now, so he helps with that, and he shoots threes. That's pretty much about it. If he has
his
to run a full off,
his defense is decent.
Yeah, it's decent. Like it's not as good as people were thinking in the finals. But
no, he's not.
He's not as bad as.
He's the 21st best point guard by defensive RPM.
Yeah, it's like above average. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if he has to play out of his role, and a max player sometimes has to, especially when there are no other max players on the team, I don't think he'll be able to be as effective.
Okay, I agree. I just brought it up because I think it's sort of interesting.
He's an excellent role player. Let's put it that way. But
he
is. Not...
But you could imagine him improving over the next 2 years and getting to a point where some team is like, well, let's give it a shot.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Good problem.
I mean, you never know until these guys get more time, right? Like, that's almost always how you get most improved players. They just get more time to play, and you had no clue what was happening before.
Yeah. Dellavedova might favor another one-year deal. You know what? I bet if the Cavs offered him 5 years, $50 million, he'd take it.
$550 million? Actually, I have a question for you. What's your over-under on him, his next deal?
Huh. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, he wants to sign a five-year deal. Probably 40.
Yeah. I think I would sign him for that, yeah.
I would sign him for 50, and I might sign... Well, I mean, look, it's not my money. and, you know, but I guess what I'm saying is I think a $550 million deal for him would immediately be obviously a good contract, and he would be tradable at that value.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine with the $550 million too. I think after that, it's kind of pushing it, but...
Yeah. What you don't want is a deal that, like, immediately looks bad and immediately becomes an albatross, and you couldn't move it even if you were willing to give him away for basically nothing.
Like, he isn't as young as people think he is. Because he spent a lot of time in the D League and stuff.
Right. Well, he played 4 years in college too. Yeah, he's
25. And he played 4 years in college, so he's 25. He's older than Kyrie, but he's still 25.
Yep.
5 year deal will put him at 30, and he's not an athletic point guard, right?
Right.
Most of his skill is based on shooting and passing now, and also some pesky defense. I think with his limited minutes, he can continue that till 32, I guess, easily.
Yeah. Okay, I have two more. The first is about Kyrie Irving. So Kyrie Irving is shooting 31.7% from three this year. His career average is 37.8%. Last year he shot 41.5% from three. Let's say somebody put a gun to your head and they said, I'm going to pick an over-under here. You need to pick an over-under for Kyrie Irving's three-point percentage next season. And if you win, he won't shoot you. And if he wins, he'll shoot you. So you're incentivized to get it as close to 50-50 as possible because everything else is worse than 50-50. Okay, all right. So you need to pick as close as you possibly can Kyrie Irving's
Do I get to know if he's going to get injured at the end of this? At the end of the postseason?
Let's say, for the sake of argument, he finishes this season uninjured.
Okay. I think my over-under actually would be like 39. He's in his prime. He's young. He has the full offseason to work out. Yeah, 39%.
We saw.
And you said his career percentage is what, 37?
Yeah, 37.8.
Yeah, I'd say 39.
Whew. Even though he's shooting 31.7 this year.
I don't care about this year. I think next year's. I think career averages are way more representative, and he's in his prime, so he should improve.
No recency bias here. Okay, I would take the under on that. So, you know, good luck. It's your life, okay. Man. Okay, last question. This is sort of non-Cavs related, but I was thinking about Tyronn Lue and how, there's a lot of hand-wringing about him and whether he's a good coach and all this kind of stuff. So I think everyone agrees that the best coach in the NBA is Greg Popovich. Who are your second and third best coaches in the NBA?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say third best. Yeah, that's hard, right? Like, I have tiers of coaches, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to sort of say second and third best, but someone, maybe Steve Kerr, maybe Stan Van Gundy, maybe Mike Budenholzer, the Hawks coach. I think one of
Interesting.
those three.
What about Brad Stevens in Boston?
I'd put him, yeah, it's hard to s I want to see what he can do with a good squad.
Yeah.
I think it's a little different. What he did with a bad squad is amazing, right? But then again, like, if you had just looked at RPM predictions, it's not like they overachieved or anything. They actually
Right.
hit their RPM predictions.
They were
Like,
meant to be a
RPM
good
predicted that
team.
exactly, yeah. Like,
Yeah.
the teams that overachieved were teams like Portland, and even they didn't overachieve as much as people thought they. Okay, did they overachieve more than what the public thought they would? But RPM kind of predicted them in the right range.
Right. Yeah, I sort of agree with you. I
But I
think
think the
that you.
Hawks overachieved the crap out of last year. 60 wins was way more than they should
Right.
have.
Yeah, my tiers, I think, are Popovich is tier A1A. No one else is on that tier. My tier two, I think, has Coach Bud, Brad Stevens, and Stan Van Gundy. I think Stan Van Gundy is a master motivator of men. I'm a little bit skeptical of his buying into analytics, just based on what we heard Jeff Van Gundy say at Sloan.
But I know they're brothers, but
They are
I don't
different
think.
people. I'm just saying, that was a data point for me, and I didn't like it. Yeah, Brad Stevens is sort of likewise in the other direction. The Celtics had some people on some of the panels at Sloan, which sort of implies to me that the Celtics get analytics and Stevens is on board. And then, Budenholzer for the reason that you said, like they really overachieved last year, and that was impressive. But after that, yeah, I
Actually,
don't know who the next tier
what about
is.
Steve Kerr? Yeah. Are you a little skeptical of him?
I am extremely skeptical of Steve Kerr.
It's hard to say. Yeah. What could he have done if he didn't have Steph Curry on his team?
Right. I mean, I'm skeptical of Phil Jackson as well. I mean,
Oh,
winning.
me too. I'm very skeptical of Phil
Yeah,
Jackson.
this is, I mean, this is, well, okay, look, Phil Jackson has sort of clearly established himself as an idiot now. Now the question is, has, something with his age, has senility come in? Like, is there something about his age and place now that was not the case back when he was sort of, everyone agreed he was the best coach in the NBA? I don't know. But certainly right now, he has really sort of hurt his reputation and his legacy in my eyes. Was he, was he doing something magical to get Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant to play well together, and Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen? Maybe, maybe without Phil Jackson as sort of the Zen master, keeping everybody calm, they would have, fallen apart. I doubt it. I think having the, rosters like that sort of makes it easy to win. So, I feel the same way about Steve Kerr. He might be good. Certainly, he's well spoken and articulate in interviews and says all the right things. And I have a friend who works for the Warriors ticketing department and marketing department, and she says that he's just a joy to work with and very well liked. So all those things are very positive signs for Steve Kerr. I need to see a little bit more adversity before I give him
Yeah, I want to see how he.
a
But
little bit
obviously, I
less
don't
of
want
Luke
to.
Walton winning everything
Right.
before.
Like, I obviously don't want to see Steph Curry injured, but I want to see how he would do if Steph Curry were to get injured for, like, say, a period of 30 games.
Right. Yeah,
See
it
how
would just be interesting to
his team
see.
would.
Yeah, I agree. I want to be pretty clear about that. Like, Steph Curry is having an amazing year, and it's really fun to watch. And it would be an incredible disappointment if for some reason he didn't make the finals. Like, this is sort
Oh
of
yeah,
like his
I think
like
from a
a.
basketball perspective, it would suck for any like unbiased fan, I guess.
Yeah, I've seen, I don't know, I've seen some rumblings on Reddit, sort of, casually wishing for an injury to him, and that would be, I don't know, I do not
Think that would
approve of
be cool
that.
for the game in general, or just for any. I don't want to see an injury to anyone, honestly.
All right, well, that was it for my questions. Do you have anything else you want to discuss before we wrap it up here?
Oh, I think that was great.
Okay, cool. All right, so this has been episode 13 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. Thanks for listening.